This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Yeah! Yeah, mother... Yeah! 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 Woo! Take that, Reimer, you...
Write to your phones, as promised. Kenny and Maine on the Patriots and Brady. Go ahead, Kenny. Kenny!
Yo!
You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, I think you guys, all three of you guys are nuts about the Patriots. You're all three of you are crazy.
Okay, give me your thought. What do you think?
The Patriots have done this before. They've gotten rid of good players, and everybody thought that Belichick had lost his mind. Okay? And I'm a first-time caller. I've been watching you guys now for 3 weeks.
Kenny, does this feel the same to you?
What's that?
Does it feel the same to you? Does this offseason and this thing with Brady, Belichick, and Kraft feel the same to you as the other times Belichick has made personnel decisions? Does it feel the same?
Yes.
Okay, to me it doesn't.
Well, see, it is the same, but it's notable because Brady's in such a different spot. Like, I understand them doing this when Brady's 36, when Brady's 38 even. But when he's got 1 or 2 years left to do it, I think it's telling.
Yeah, I'm talking about the whole thing. The whole vibe in there is different than it was when Bill's done this in the past. When he cuts Logan Mankins at the end of camp, and first of all, it's closer to the season. Brady's not going anywhere. You know they'll be over it in 2 weeks. Like, this, to me, the whole thing feels different. Like, Brady and Tom are leveraging Belichick and Brady are leveraging for power, and Kraft is in the middle of this thing, and the whole thing doesn't feel right to me. It doesn't feel... No, the personnel decisions this spring in terms of going younger and letting veteran guys go, sure. Yeah, Belichick has done that in the past, absolutely.
No, but that is business as usual, and I think it's notable because when you invest in a 41-year-old quarterback, you would figure you would want to surround him and you would sort of push your chips into the near term to service that 41-year-old, and they're not. And they're not. They're acting as if, you know, they're planning for the next 5 to 10 years, even though the quarterback's got two left, and I think that that's a notable story. So that's what I've sort of driven home. I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's the right thing to do. It's just these moves are really for the next quarterback, not for this one. That's all.
Well, you had the guy, and you moved on from him last year. So now it should be about surrounding Brady with talent for the next few years. It seems like they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
You watch, a quarterback's coming in that first round, and I'm going to lose my mind. If I'm going to be that mad, I can't imagine how Brady's going to feel.
Kraft turned the ship in Brady's direction when he traded Garoppolo. Now he's turning it back. So if Tom doesn't like it, too bad.
So, Murray, what's it going to sound like if they draft a quarterback this year, Jimmy Stewart?
Probably. I want to swear so bad.
Yeah, no, yeah. I was looking for the...
It's going to be that. You watch.
Here's Bobby Revere.
Yeah!
That's what it's going to sound like. Okay, he's going to...
Yeah!
Bobby Revere. Go ahead, Bobby. What do you got, Bobby? Go ahead.
There it is.
Now, this is all I got to say. This Alex Guerrero guy, if he ends my dynasty... I'm going to go up. 10,000 New England Patriots fans are going to run him out of damn town. I don't like that. It was all right with Tom Brady doing the whole Guerrero treatment. But Gronk wants to be a little crybaby. We can ship him out, too, is what I say. I don't care how good he is. Bottom line is he can't win a Super Bowl, and I can. Tom Brady's won 5. Gronk's won 1. Who does he think he is?
Okay.
And that's all I got to say.
All right.
Have a good day, guys.
You started by saying if Guerrero breaks this thing up, I mean, Guerrero's going to be an agent. I think this thing's ending sooner than it normally would have, and I think Guerrero's a big reason why.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. How do you solve that one? Is Brady going to turn his back on Guerrero? No.
Doesn't feel like it.
Is Bill going to let him back in the locker room?
I wouldn't.
I doubt it. So that one is where it is. It's stuck. Like, and look, I'm sorry, the Gronk thing goes back to Brady. You can't blame Gronk and not blame Brady. Gronk doesn't even pull it without Brady. He doesn't pull that nonsense. No way.
Brady opened the door. Frank in the truck. How you doing, Frank the Tank on the Bees? What do you got?
I'm good. Listen, Mike, I call total BS, absolute BS on you right now for saying that your Bruin, you know, little boy fandom isn't going to come out. That is a lie. And you know it.
No, I'm going to keep it in my pants, Frank. I've grown since then. I've grown.
It's in your blood, Mike. Don't lie to me. I can smell it. All right? Don't lie. You know you're going to get excited if they pull off an overtime win in this series. Don't kid yourself.
Maybe.
Look, I can only imagine what the Southern boys used to think when I would call Murray down there and talk about hockey. But, look, I don't care that Giunta is on the line. If Nash can't go, I'm fine with it. I would like a little bit of veteran presence to start the playoffs here.
So hold on, you'd be fine if Giunta were in the lineup and Donato were not?
Yes. And listen, I'm going to tell you why. I like the fact that they're going to go with DeBrusk over Donato.
I'm fine there.
DeBrusk played in the juniors.
Frank,
it's a different game than
Frank,
college.
Frank, I'm not debating DeBrusk. I'm talking about Giunta over Donato. Why would you be okay with that trade-off?
This is why. For the first game, maybe the first, I would like for him to sit upstairs and watch what's going on. He isn't ready for playoff hockey yet, much like some of the younger guys weren't really ready last year. And I know what you're going to say. You need experience and blah, blah, blah. For one game or whatever, let the kid sit upstairs and watch. Let Giunta get in there for some veteran presence. I'm okay with that. I do expect to see Donato in the lineup, and I think it's going to be a trade-off with him and DeBrusk. DeBrusk has got to bring it if he wants to stay in the lineup.
I agree 100%. And I'm with Maz. It's not going to come to it. And Joe McDonald said it, that Giunta was just a placeholder for practice because Giunta more closely approximates Riley Nash, and it's for Backes and Heinen at practice. So I believe that. And you're not going to see Giunta over Donato, so maybe it's not even worth talking about. But that was the trade-off today. And if that really happens in a game, I don't think there's any way to justify it. You say Donato's not ready for the playoffs? Let me tell you something. Giunta isn't either, even though he's played in them. In the past, he's not ready either. He's played 12 NHL games. He's just like Donato. He's got the same amount of NHL games this year as Donato, just about. His big experience was playing Belarus in South Korea or whatever. It's not. Giunta ain't ready either. I hate to break it to you. So there's that.
Younger Maz, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So now it comes down to Stanton, who has not had a great homestand, who is having a bad day, 0-for-6. He lined into a double play, has 4 strikeouts, and now the game comes down to this at bat, if the Yankees are going to either tie it or win it or end it. Swing and a miss, and Stanton down on strikes, and the Yankees lose the game. Incredibly, bases loaded, nobody out, bottom of the 12th inning, Judge and Stanton do up, and John, they don't get it done, and this was an ugly series for the Yankees.
Which team do you think has more to prove? And so the Yankees have more pressure on them this year, if you ask me. Like, the Yankees are the team that everyone is billing as a World Series contender, all of that. So overall, there's more pressure on the Yankees. But who has more to prove? I say the Red Sox.
Really?
Yes.
At this stage?
Yes. Last year, the Yankees won 11-8 against the Red Sox. So let me flip it the other way around, because we're talking about the Red Sox. They went 8-11. The Yankees shut them down. Do you remember how many times the Red Sox couldn't score? Remember those stats about the Red Sox average of runners in scoring position against New York? And the Yankees starting pitching is vulnerable and blah, 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 blah. The Red Sox scored 59 runs in 19 games. 59 runs. They lost 11 out of 19 to the Yankees. And Frankly, the Yankees were better than the Red Sox last year. I don't care who won the division. The Yankees beat them head-to-head, and the Yankees in the playoffs were a hell of a lot more successful than the Red Sox were. So I want to see now, go head-to-head with New York. Can you beat them straight up? Sale didn't beat New York once all year last year. He started 5 games. The Red Sox went 1-4. He was 0-3.
The Red Sox have more to prove tonight in this series than the Yankees.
I think so. Murray, where are you on this?
I think the Yankees do as of right now, because they have looked like a complete mess so far.
I mean, that's why I think that things have fallen together a little bit better for the Red Sox this year than the Yankees, wouldn't you say?
Okay, so if the Yankees come in here and win 2 out of 3 and then leave, how are we looking at the Red Sox? 8-1, great. You can beat the crap teams, but a good team comes in here and you lose.
A little bit.
Just like you did last year.
And if the Yankees lose 2 out of 3, it's like, look out below.
Maybe. Yeah, there might be some of that. I'm just telling you that, to me, there's more at stake for the Red Sox. They've played cream puffs so far. And I'm not telling you the Yankees have played the Titans of the league, but I think they've played better competition than the Red Sox have.
They were just playing Tampa.
It's hard to find 2 teams the Red Sox have played, 2 teams that are worse than the ones the Red Sox have played. Murray, they've played 9 games against the white trash of Florida. That's what they've played. The white trash of Florida.
Well, the Orioles suck, too. I mean,
they're not as bad as Tampa and Florida, or the Marlins. To me, so look, again, and I go back to last year, I'm sorry. The Red Sox got handed to them by the Yankees last year. So I would like to see them show that they can hit the Yankees and smack them around and that Sale can beat the Yankees. I would like to see that at some point.
Okay, a couple big storylines. One will obviously be Giancarlo Stanton, who's off to just a wretched start. Even though he's got three homers, he's pretty much has nothing else. Hitting 160-something, striking out in about half of his at-bats.
Yankee talk.
Thank you, John. We also, you know, we gave you these stats yesterday. He struck out five times in two different games in the Yankees' homestand. And that's like the first time in the live ball era anyone has struck out five times in a game, twice in a season.
Right.
Never mind twice in a week.
Right. I think, right.
It's something like that. So he's got some history-making futility on his side.
I still love the stat Murray gave. Stanton struck out 16 times on the first homestand. In 1941, Joe DiMaggio struck out 13 times all year. Murray told me that stat last night, and I'm like, that can't be right.
No, he stopped mid-show to look it up.
That can't be right. There's no way Joe DiMaggio struck out 13 times in an entire season. It was true. Stanton struck out 16 times. 16!
Okay, and he's getting his ass booed in the Bronx. Was on from the home opener. He got booed in the home opener, which to me is still stunning. Now he comes to Boston. We've taken a look. Maz has invested in Giancarlo Stanton. I don't know if you've noticed before. So we've been taking a look. Maz has been taking a look at Giancarlo Stanton, and something has jumped out to you about what's been going on with him, and you might have a fix for Giancarlo Stanton.
Well, both of us, I think. I mean, I said this to you last week. I said, I don't remember his stance being that close. And then you made the same observation the other day. So we went back and looked.
So
and
closed meaning his front foot is so – it feels like he's turning his back to the pitcher more than I've ever seen anyone do it almost.
Right. Like his stance is in such a way now that it's as if he's already taken a step to get on a first base. Right?
Yes.
I mean, that's how you think of it. That left foot – he's already taken a step toward first base, and so his stance is it's closed. Last year, early in the year, he was even. His stance was parallel. It was a neutral stance. And so we have pictures of it here up on the simulcast, and you can see it. And so I look at Stanton now, and I say, if you're standing like that, I know how I'm going to pitch you. High fastball, inner half. How are you going to get there? You can't turn on that pitch. It's hard enough to hit as it is. Most guys open to hit that pitch, for crying out loud. You've closed on it. So if you come in, you know, over the plate and up in the strike zone on the inner half, he can't get there. No way can he get there. And so my guess is it. Now, look, I looked at there was a thing on YouTube of him that showed all of his home runs from a year ago. As the year went on, he started to close a little bit more and more, as you said yesterday off the air, creeping.
Yeah.
Right? Creeping. And now all of a sudden, I think he's ended up with this. And I think this makes him more vulnerable and easier to pitch to. And so if I'm the Yankees, I pull him aside and go, what the hell is this?
This is a pretty simple fix.
Absolutely. It's as basic as it gets.
You and I can look at this. How does someone not, and this leads to, I think, my most interesting, and the thing I want to watch the most in this series is the managing between these two. I mean, Cora's still doing questionable sort of rookie stuff, but nothing compared to what Boone is doing down in New York. And so maybe the Yankees had a little brain drain there, and I don't know. How do you not pick up on this, though? This is so obvious.
So I don't even know who their hitting coach is now. I don't know if Murray or Jimmy, one of you guys, could check that out quickly. But, like, I'd be willing to bet they already went to him and said something like, you sure you want to be that closed?
Marcus Thames?
Oh, yeah, okay. He's a former big leaguer. And I don't know if he's been a hitting coach before. And maybe he's a guy who doesn't feel like he can go to Stanton. But I look at Stanton, to me, it's the first thing I would say to him. And my guess is, you know, in the second half last year, I looked up his numbers. He had 33 home runs. 33 of his 59 in the second half, which obviously has fewer games in it in the first half because the All-Star break always comes late. So he was more productive in the second half, but he hit most of those in August and September. He only hit 8 home runs, and he hit .245. So I wonder if it didn't hurt him at the end of last year, but in his mind, all he was doing was going up there hacking for home runs at the end of the year, probably trying to negate breaking balls on the outside part of the plate. So he closed up his stance to try to get those pitches and get more access to outside pitches. And now here you are. He hasn't changed it, and teams are coming at him in a different way. I just think that's stupid. When you have his kind of power, what do you got to worry about, you know, angling yourself to the opposite field for? You can hit that ball out with a broken bat, for crying out loud. I just, at some point, that's going to change. You watch.
If you're a Yankee fan, what worries you most about their start?
I would say all across the board, all of it. That Stanton hasn't shown an ability to deal with New York. That the lineup, the thing would concern me about the lineup is that it feels, you know, you have that many power guys in there that you trick or treat. You know, they've had some injuries, so that's a factor too. Sanchez has missed some time already. The starting pitching's been good. For all the criticisms of the starting pitching, I think they have one of the best ERAs among rotations, top three or four teams in the league, maybe the majors. You know, the bullpen's a little suspect. The defense has been awful. Like, the only thing that's been good, really, is the starting pitching. So if you're a Yankee fan, I don't know how you can feel good about any of it at the moment because you had doubts about the starting pitching going in. So, look, they played like crap. I still think the Red Sox have to show me they can beat this team because they couldn't beat them last year. And what I want to see in this series, I want to see some edge. Like, these two teams are now legit. They're both going to be good. They're both going to be there. You know, we started to see a little bit at the end of last year when Nunez bunted on Sabathia. Sabathia bitched about it. And then you had the whole Apple Watch thing between Cashman and Dombrowski, and those two spitting at each other. It doesn't sound like they like each other, and Dombrowski was pissed about the fact that Cashman didn't go to the Red Sox first. So I would like to see some of that actually build up. It'd be good for both teams if that happened.
I want to see the managers. Because you know these games, you know, if history's any guide, they're going to be 3.5, 4-hour games with a million pitching moves, a million things that happen late in the innings, and plenty of room for second-guessing of these two guys. It feels like Boone is completely clueless, and Cora is just sort of rookie managing his way through the early part of the season with plenty of things to pick apart. But I still find it outrageous that these two teams went with first-year managers. I think of the two, the Yankees are 10 times worse. That at least Cora was on a bench last year and has had some field experience. Some. Boone has absolutely none. He went from Jess Mendoza up in the booth to the New York Yankees, which is, to me, just so preposterous that he was allowed to do that or asked to do that. That, you know, so I'm just sort of watching from afar and reading some of the things that he's done and some of the moves that he's made. You know, he slept at Yankee Stadium the other night? Slept there. Or at least told everybody that he did. Which is like,
did they have a day game after a night game or something?
What a warning sign. Like, I'm going to try and figure this out. I'm going to sleep at the stadium.
Francona used to do that all the time.
Did he tell everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, to me, that's one of those things that's like, he's trying to show people he's committed to it.
Yeah.
It just feels different. It feels different.
I'm working so hard that I got to sleep here. You guys don't know.
Like a rookie manager's first 2 weeks on the job, I'm sleeping here.
Shut up.
It's different than Francona, career lifer. You know, he probably passed out. I'm not even going to get into it. But, yeah, I mean, you know what I mean.
I want to know who stayed there with him.
It's different. It's different. I think Boone has to be, by definition, just way over his skis. Like, completely out of his... It just can't be. Can't be ready for that job. And so I want to see it. I want to see it. I want to see him and Cora. That's what I'm sort of watching.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
How you doing, Felger?
Good, Billy. What do you got?
Well, got to get on Mads again. I called a couple of days ago. Just wanted to see his dance before, but I got a new one today. Here we go. Stanton, 10 strikeouts. He's got to listen or look it up. Or somebody looking up for him and go back to Joe DiMaggio 70 years ago and compare him to Stanton that he struck out 10 times.
16.
If you think those boos were bad in New York, wait till tonight when he strikes out another 3 times. And I'd love to hear the boo report again, just the end of it when he struck him out again. Just do it one time for me.
Okay, so what I find amazing is that the Yankee fans booed him on opening day.
No, they were on him right out of the gate.
Why are they? Because he came out of the road off the road and wasn't that bad, and they struck out 5 times in the home opener, and they booed him. I said this yesterday. I do not remember Yankee fans being quite that bad.
Yeah, and you know what? Kay said it on the broadcast too. He said, "Oh, that's a little harsh." Like, so they're on him right away. But I think, you know, this is what you get when you're making $30 million a year and you come to a more intense market. Now, look, again, I wanted him here. I'm not telling you that, but if he can't hack it, well, then that's his problem.
Okay, here's Matt in Framingham with the Celtics thought of all things. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, well, Murray, that was hilarious. And you're so right. There's nothing like playoff hockey. But in the meantime, between that and this Sox and Yankees, I find it intriguing watching this fight for position to get the 7 seed to play the Celtics. If you watched last night, I threw my piggy bank at Oklahoma City because I knew that Pat Riley and the Miami Heat, slimy, they would tank. And that's exactly what they did halfway through the game when they saw the Bucks were up, you know? So I'm hoping that we're going to play the Bucks. I want to see Greek the Freak. I don't want to see Miami. You know, hopefully we win tonight. And then the 76ers, they...
Hey, Matt.
Hopefully, yes.
Can I say with all the love and respect in my heart, I love you. I mean, you know I mean it. But
yeah,
it's unbelievable. But at this stage, you know how I feel about the Celtics? You're going to have to do it on your own time.
Oh, boo.
They went to a zero. Don't you think? There's nothing worth investing in.
No, sure. The silver lining here is that it's, you know, you're getting these minutes for the young guys, and they're going to get some playoff experience. Guys like Jason Tatum, it's going to be his first playoff experience. I still think that there's something to bite into here. There is for me.
I mean, so look, I'm going to watch the playoffs. I'm not telling you that. I'm going to watch because I want to see how some of these young guys do in some of these games. But in terms of, like, sinking your teeth into it, and, you know, if they lose in the first round, are you going to be shocked?
No, see, this is where I went back and forth with Chris on this over the weekend because he thinks it's certainly a possibility that they could lose in the first round, and he's not going to be shocked at all. I think it's inexcusable. I don't care about these injuries. I don't care that Kyrie and Marcus Smart are out. If they lose in this first round, it's inexcusable.
Really?
They should still win a round.
Oh,
Milwaukee, Miami, Washington, they should win in the first round.
And you'll kill them if they don't.
Yeah.
All right, well, that has my attention. That brings me back from zero a little bit.
So for everything else, I'm sorry to cut you off, Tony, but for everything that I've been led to believe here with the coach, Jimmy, is that he should still be able to win a round, the first round, against these lesser teams, well, even without Kyrie Irving.
Don't forget your max contract big guy.
Right. And, you know, with the way that you've seen these young players like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown play here down the stretch, I expect them to win the first round regardless of these injuries.
Yeah, I want to see how these young guys do. That's what I want to see. To me, that's important.
All aboard.
Train. I'll tell you, I it's borderline tragic, sports tragic, what happened to this team. We were, you know, they were never going to win a championship, but... You still had Kyrie versus LeBron on the docket, and you still had a real chance to go to the NBA Finals and announce your presence as the next team in the NBA. And I thought that was absolutely on the table this spring for the Celtics. And so, even though you're not winning a championship, those are good stakes, and those are good. It was an entertaining spring for the Celts. And I think when they shut Kyrie down, it went to zero. I do. I just think there's nothing really to see or prove or glean from this team.
See, Celtics fans are so disingenuous about this, too. Because on the one hand, they sit here and say, oh, Stevens is great. The bench is great. Look at Rozier. Look at Tatum. Look at Brown. And then Kyrie goes down. It's, you know, that's... Well, so again, well, which one is it? Like, so look, Murray, the difference between me and you is, if you tell me they play sure, they should beat Miami. Yeah. Hell yeah. I'm going to watch the playoffs.
They should beat any of these three teams I could end up with.
But would you be shocked if they didn't?
Yeah, in the first round, I would be.
See, I wouldn't be shocked. I could totally see some of these guys getting exposed. I felt that way before Kyrie got hurt, that Jaylen Brown could get pantsed in the postseason. I could totally see that.
Scott in Weymouth on the Bees. Hi, Scott.
What's up? What's up, guys? I'm calling to talk about hockey, but that is hysterical to get booed on opening day. I'm literally laughing as I'm on hold. That's hysterical. Opening day, hysterical. All right, NHL playoffs. Felgi, ready? Here we go.
Okay, babe.
Even my non-hockey-loving friends love the NHL playoffs. Every game's on TV. I have two predictions if I'm granted the time.
Do it.
First, the Toronto series and the Vegas series. Toronto gives the Bruins a lot of problems. The Bruins team look great, you know, January 9th at Florida. Well, playoff hockey is a different breed. Now, one may argue, well, Toronto's in the same boat. No, they're not, because all the pressure's on Boston. Toronto's very fast. I'm very concerned about the Bruins in round one. Very concerned. Secondly, Vegas. If anybody bets out there, certainly I would never condone sports betting, right? I will guarantee you that Vegas loses in round one to the LA Kings.
I got you.
Do you really think the Kings, with their experience and quick and net, is going to lose to Vegas in round one?
I agree. And the Vegas flu ain't going to exist. You ain't going to go there and have your rookie dinner and get all blotto in the playoffs. The Vegas flu ends in the playoffs. I got the Kings in that one, too. To me, it would not surprise me one bit if Vegas is one and done and out very, very soon. Los is in Fall River on Red Sox Yankees. Go ahead, Los.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. Totally agree with Matt. The Red Sox have to kick Yankee butt right from the beginning of the season. In addition, I'd like to hear your rebuttal regarding Cora's handling of the team. The fact that he's created an environment of relaxation and cohesiveness. You guys were ready to condemn Cora after game one. What the heck's up with that?
I'll still condemn him. It's 9 games into the year, Los. And what? Of course they're all happy. They're 8-1. Let's see them after a couple 3-game losing streaks. And when the Jackals start howling and everyone gets on them, then we'll know. Let's see when Eckersley gets on Price, which he probably won't. Well, when someone gets on Price, and now Cora's got to handle that baby. We have no clue what Cora and what the, you know, atmosphere and all that stuff is really going to be on that team. No clue.
Yeah, Cora hasn't encountered any real adversity yet. None.
And
fact, nothing even close.
To me, I need to know how much of it is Cora and how much of it is anyone but Farrell.
Right, the absence of Farrell.
Just face it, getting rid of Farrell and bringing in anyone, you'd get a bump because they grew to hate that guy. We all did. So anything was going to be better, and so it is. Now, what does Cora actually bring to the table? We're going to find that out.
I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that, again, three of the guys that maybe Farrell had the toughest time connecting with are having maybe the best years on the team. Bogarts, until he got hurt. Price, who's been awesome in the first two games. And Hanley, who's been terrific. Hanley's been like a model citizen all the way around. He's hitting. He's playing defense. He's not causing any problems. Where did that come from?
This is Felger and Mazz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mazz.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. The answer that Kraft gives, I hope he plays. What was the setup to that statement? What was the question or conversation leading up to that statement, I hope he plays?
The question was basically a setup by saying around this time last year was when you said that you just had a conversation with Tom Brady and he reiterated that he wanted to play until he's about 45 or 46 or whatever that mid-40s age range was at the time. And with all that in mind, do you still feel that same confidence level that Brady wants to play until he's about 45? And that's when he said, I hope he plays, and then the rest of the quote.
The answer is no when you read the Rob Kraft story. Again, The Athletic Boston, another online subscription sports page, if you will. It's national, but they have a Boston edition. Jeff Howe, who used to write for The Herald, now writes for The Athletic. And they opened up today. It was their first day as The Athletic Boston, and so is... As part of that, I assume, Kraft agreed to do an interview with Jeff Howe. And in this story, basically, echoes what a lot of people have said about Tom Brady, and that it feels like it's now year to year. After telling us for years and years that he's playing to 45 and he has the answers and he's never felt better and he plays into his mid-40s and mid-40s and mid-40s now, it feels like it's year to year. And that's my takeaway from the story with Robert Kraft's comments. Because it's a departure from what he said in the past. Let me read you the story. Months ago, writes Jeff Howe, it seemed like a virtual certainty that Patriots quarterback Tom Brady would sign a contract extension this offseason. He hasn't. And with his football mortality as real as it's ever been, there's been a perception that the absence of a longer-term arrangement could be a concern, or should be a concern, he wrote. That logic might seem out of whack because Brady still signed through the 2019 season, 2 years to go, but consider his history. Of the quarterback's five contract extensions, four were struck with 2 seasons remaining on his deal. The only exception was when he was coming off the knee injury in 2009. So what's the deal now, writes Howe. Patriots owner Robert Kraft, comma, who personally negotiated Brady's most recent extension, end comma, told The Athletic it was fairly straightforward, and they'll gather at the negotiating table if it becomes necessary. Quote, he'll be 41 when the season starts, Kraft said. Neither side has an issue with it. If it becomes an issue, we'll deal with it. And the first thing that jumped out to me is the same thing that jumped out to these guys when they first read it, and which is?
He'll be 41 in August.
Not only does Kraft mention his age, he pulls that trick that you do when you're trying to make someone sound older than they are.
You bump it up.
Which is telling you what he's going to be.
You round up.
Not what he is. How old is Tom Brady right now there, Jim Murray?
He's actually 40 years old.
How do you make him sound older?
By the time the season starts, Tom Brady will be 41.
So Kraft is doing, again, what Felger and Mazz have been doing for about 6 years.
We invented it.
Which is like, but it's the oldest trick in the book, really, Mazz. You want to make someone sound old? You want to make someone sound younger? You say, well, he just turned 40. Is what you say. Because it was in August, right? So it's like the half month. It's like the half year anniversary of it. But it's like 6 months. If you want to make someone sound younger, you say, well, he's 40. He just turned 40 6 months ago.
Yeah. And you could also say he just won the MVP of the league. He's playing as well as he ever has.
Sprinkle in other superlatives. He looks like he's 30.
If you want to make someone sound older, you add to their next birthday.
Right. He'll be 42 in 2019.
So, again, we've been doing this to Brady. And, you know, we've been doing this to Brady since he was 36, 37. He's going to be 38 next year. And by the end of it, he'll be 39. And, you know, we had him 5 years older than he really was. You want to play the game, you can make Brady be 50 if you want. But that's what Kraft did there. When he did that, that's the first indication I said, uh-oh, oh, now Kraft is in the same place we are. And I also found it interesting that Kraft personally negotiated Brady's most recent extension. Bill's in charge of the contracts. Bill does contracts, or he delegates to those he wants to do the contracts, except for one guy. So it's becoming more and more clear that Belichick has control over his football team, minus one, at least. So anyway, Howe writes that Brady would most certainly entertain contract negotiations, according to a source, but there haven't been any negotiations of note. Brady's set to earn $15 million in cash this year and next, carries back-to-back $22 million cap hits. There are two possible reasons why Brady has not pressed for an extension this offseason. One, the reigning MVP should be confident he'll maintain his level of play and then hit the negotiating table a year from now and get fair treatment once again from Kraft. Or two, maybe Brady's feelings have changed regarding his career longevity. He was obviously conflicted at the conclusion of Tom vs. Time, which had been filmed in the days following the crushing Super Bowl loss in Super Bowl 52 that capped a mentally grinding season. Maybe, just maybe, he has considered the possibility that he only wants to play a couple more years. Kraft was asked if he remained as confident that Brady would indeed forge on into his mid-40s. And that's where Kraft answered. "I hope he plays," Kraft responded. "He's at a different point in his life. He talked about it. It's interesting to see that Tom versus Time and see where he's at. His kids growing up. But that is something for he and his family to decide what is right for him." And then he does go on. He says, "Me personally, I'd like to see him play as long as he can. I don't think anyone would have believed 10 years ago that dot, 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 dot." But to me, that first part of that comment is instructive because this is a change for Kraft. Because every time Kraft has been asked about this previously, what has he said?
"Oh, Tom can play 5-6 more years. He'll play into his mid-40s. He takes great care of himself. He's still playing at a high level. Blah, 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 blah."
Exactly. Every time Kraft has been asked about this, that's what Kraft has said. Now it's, "I hope he plays." And again, just to prove this to you, we pulled Robert Kraft last year at this time. It was at the owners' meetings, which were last week, but this is the owners' meetings of 2017. So a year ago, he's asked the exact same thing about Tom Brady. Listen to how he answers.
"As recently as 2-3 days ago, he assured me he'd be willing to play 6-7 more years. And at the level he performed in, there's no one that would be happier than I."
Okay. Think about how different that is. He told me, first of all, he told me 2-3 days. He told me firsthand, because we're talking and we're conversing. He told me 2-3 days ago he's playing for 6 or 7 more years at the same level he has been. And now, a year later, Jeff Howe asks him if he's still as confident, and Kraft says, "I hope he plays." But he's at a different point in his life. He's talked about it. It's interesting to see in that Tom versus Time. And then he quotes the docuseries.
Which is how we got our information.
Exactly. So it feels like this is a segment on Felger and Maz. He's making Brady older than he is and saying, "Well, he's at a different point in his life. Just look at the documentary." What happened to talking to him every 2 to 3 days? The last time Kraft is asked, I just spoke to him. He says he's playing 6 or 7 more years at the same level, and I wouldn't bet against him. You know, like, that's, I'm looking forward to seeing that. Now it's, "I hope he plays." And if you look at that documentary, you see he's at a different point of his life. Like, and again, it all goes back to, I wish Brady pulled this crap when Garoppolo was still here.
Well,
and then they could have made the proper decision. If you're going to be year to year, which is what this feels like, and the fact that they're not going to redo him, and I wouldn't either. If you're talking about retirement, you don't get new money and you don't get extended. But the fact that they're doing this after they trade Garoppolo is aggravating.
But he wouldn't have done this before. Brady wouldn't have acted that way before they traded Garoppolo, because at the workplace, everything was going his way. He had his trainer right there. The trainer was able to go with him on road trips and all these road games and everything else. But post-Garoppolo, that changed. And so Brady, who didn't like the coach anyway, really learned to hate the coach because he took away his trainer and made his life extra miserable. And so now it's a problem for Tom. And so I think the communication between Brady and Kraft, well, it's gotten worse, but it certainly isn't what it was a year ago when Robert Kraft was saying, "Oh yeah, he'll play till 45 and all of that. So he finds out that Tom is saying, "What am I doing this for?" The same way we all did when we saw that final episode of Tom versus Time. So that's where Kraft is right to feel, "Well, what the hell is going on here? Wait a minute, what? I thought you were dedicated. We've chosen you. So now you're going to say, what, you might be here to year now? Huh? What the hell am I hearing? So in that sense, I can understand if, you know, there's some animosity on behalf of Robert Kraft looking at Tom Brady right now.
Yeah, to me, the reason Brady didn't say it earlier is because they would have chosen Garoppolo.
If Brady had pulled this crap 2 years ago,
Kraft would have chosen Garoppolo.
Absolutely. They all would have.
Well, Bill did anyway.
Because they would, yeah, Bill's going to do it either way. Right. But if Brady was pulling this crap about you have to question why you do this and who you're doing it for and why you get the rubdowns 3 days after the season and this is now the offseason of his family, and if Brady was pulling this crap 2-3 years, there'd be no debate internally in Foxborough. When someone starts talking about retirement, they're already done. And Brady knows it. So he knows it. He's trying to fend off Garoppolo. He's trying to keep his job. So what does he say? I'm playing to 45. I've got all the answers. It's never been easier. I've never felt better. I don't even get sore anymore. And the owner buys it. The owner buys it. And so they trade the kid, and now it's just gotten real. Brady's talking like a normal 41-year-old. He's now talking like a normal 41-year-old. How long do I want to keep doing this? Why do I want to keep doing this? And Brady's totally within his rights, and it's totally normal that he's doing it. But Robert bought the fact that it was going to be different with Brady.
Yeah, it seems to me now that the owner of the Patriots is coming to the realization he made the wrong choice. That's what I think. I mean, to me, there's no way around that.
So
now, he might have been loyal to Brady either way, right? Brady's done a lot for them. So he might have been loyal to him either way. But, you know, now all of a sudden, you pull the rug out from under the feet of the owner. Yeah, I'll give you 3-5 more years. Then you trade the guy, and, you know, I don't know, maybe not.
That's so, I'm
kind of tired.
I would be so aggravated if I were the Patriots with that. Whether Brady's, you know, Brady ultimately comes around or not. You know, just the fact that they're going through this little thing where Brady's playing this game, or is serious, either way, would aggravate me to no end. What happened to 6 to 7 years, Tom? I just asked you last year. You said 6 to 7 years. Now it's, I hope he plays. He's 41 next year. Ay, ay, ay. I don't know. Like, that turned quickly, didn't it?
Well, he hates the coach and he wants him gone.
So I know you're still
stuck on that one. I think that's exactly what it is. You know, I think Tom is just playing a game here, and he's trying to see if he can find a way to try to get Bill out. That's what it is. He hates the coach.
See, I don't think it's about getting Bill out, though, Murray. I really don't. I think it was about, you know, proving Bill wrong with Garoppolo.
Yes.
He did that. He was pissed about it. He didn't want Garoppolo here, even though it extended his career and made him better. And so his whole motivation was to beat Bill on the Garoppolo thing. He's hyper-competitive, so he wanted to beat Bill. Now that he's beaten him... Oh, yeah, Robert, by the way, I'm only playing a couple more years. Stop.
Curran called it a bait and switch. Which is what it feels like. And if I were the Patriots, I'd feel aggravated over the whole thing.
Somewhere, Belichick is laughing his ass off about
this. So wait a
minute.
If McDaniels was the head coach of this team right now, you think Brady would be talking this way? Because I don't.
I do, yeah. I do. Because I think that he will have beaten Bill. And he already did. He beat Bill on the Garoppolo thing. He won. To me, this goes back. The more I think about it, I said this to you earlier. The more I think about it, it goes back to that draft night. Given the quarterback's age and contract situation, given Tom's age and contract situation, and Brady went, what? What the hell are you talking about? And then you throw Deflategate on top of it? The last 4 years were an F you to Bill. That's what they were. F you to Bill. He won. The owner made him trade Garoppolo, and now it's I'm leaving on my own terms. To me, that's what it's about.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.